I am to blame for everything, then I can also take action and solve everything. So I don't depend on government handouts. I don't depend on whether or not Social Security is going to exist when I'm at retirement age. Like, I just pave my own path. And if I just focus on doing that, my life is better. And I'm not focused on what everybody else is doing, because I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, paving my own path, accepting that if I don't like the circumstances in my life, I can change them. But I also need to accept that if I don't like the circumstances in my life, it is only my fault.
Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I'm someone that doesn't drink alcohol. And I spend every waking moment of this life helping other people do the same, like right now. Okay, folks, what a nightmare this last couple of weeks have been. I'm currently in Tahunga in California, still with my in-laws, and I was due to fly, it's Thursday now, I'm due to fly to the UK with Liza and Zia to see my wonderful boy Jude on Sunday. However, Zia's been really sick for the past week, really 7 days. She developed a couple of ulcers on her bottom lip, led by a virus, which turned into massive fever. And it's been an absolute nightmare. She's still not over it. We can't fly on Sunday, so we're going to have to push the flights back another 2 weeks. Air New Zealand wants to charge us another £850 for doing that. Thanks, Air New Zealand. Really appreciate that. So really tough, challenging week, really, all around. Look, you know, when you have a child that is ill, it creates so much tension. Tension in between relationships between me and Liza, tension between relationships between me, Liza, and a mother-in-law, because you've got this little thing that you love and you just want the best for her, and you've got three parents with different ways of wanting to treat her and help her. And, you know, it's been really difficult and really challenging. But I tell you this, folks, anybody out there that drinks alcohol in order for them to deal with their quote-unquote children, whether they're sick or not, come on, man. Like, there is no way, no matter how you throw the dice and how they land, there is no way you're ever going to get me to believe that drinking alcohol helps you to look after your kids. No way. It just destroys you. If I was drinking alcohol this last week, what a nightmare. I would be let down my wife. I would not be present for my kid. I'd be more irritable, I'd be more angry, I would just be a mess. Plus, I would be feeling really sick, really horrible. So, no, folks. If you want to look after your children, ditch the booze, okay? Ditch the booze. Do it for your kids, right? Do it for your children. Really super important. Now, we have just started the first ever Strive Truth Awareness Freedom Experience, okay? It began on Sunday. And we've currently got around between 25 and 30 people on there at the moment getting stuck into that. They're really doing a lot of good work. They've just coming towards the back end of the introduction videos. And they're going to be working for the next 3 months, kind of playing around with their ambivalence around whether or not they want to stop drinking alcohol or not. Okay. Now, what they're doing is they're following a model that I call the Strive Model for Change. And it consists of six different stages of change. And that is stuck, thought, that is research, initiative, vigilance, and enlightenment. Okay. And each stage is designed by yours truly to meet the person where they are in their stage of development when it comes to beating addiction. Okay. Now, currently, this crop of amazing strivers are going through the stuck phase. All right. And then they will go through the thought phase. Now, it's going to take them around 3 months. And at the end of those two phases, I'll be saying to them, look, who's ready to move forward and take significant action? And for those who put their hand up and say me, and if I and the other Strive coaches and ambassadors agree, then they will then move forward into the research phase and they will begin their journey 1,000 days sober, right? We're going to go 1,000 days successive sober. That's what we're going to do. For those at the end of the thought phase who turn around and say, well, we're not quite ready yet, or we as coaches don't believe they're ready yet, then no bother. We'll just stay working in that thought phase. working on our assignments, doing some homework and kind of figuring out and just taking our time and being patient and compassionate, okay, and having faith that this person will change when they want to change. And that's where they will remain at that level. And that is really important. We do not want people to be actively changing or to get involved in an action-orientated system when they're not ready to take action. That is just going to be detrimental to their development as they take on this big, massive, powerful beast, which is alcohol addiction. So I'm going to spend the next couple of podcasts just explaining briefly what these phases are. I'm going to begin by the stuck phase. So the stuck phase of any addiction is basically when people do not know that they're actually addicted. So obviously we're talking about alcohol here. So good example would be my old man, right? So my old man is what? He's like 68 now, something like that. He's been drinking alcohol since he was 14. My old man has no idea that he's addicted to alcohol. None at all. He just thinks that to go to the pub every weekend and to drink anywhere between 10 and 20 pints every weekend for his life is normal. He doesn't think that that's addictive whatsoever. And if I asked him to stop drinking, there would be a lot of excuses and denial, a lot of reasons why he wouldn't want to do that. But ultimately, he wouldn't be able to do that, okay? Now, when you can't stop drinking, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter what reason it is, right? If you can't stop drinking, it's pretty likely that you're addicted to it, right? You need it, okay? You cannot function in life without it. And alcohol is like that, right? So my old man has no idea that he's addicted to alcohol. And even worse than that, he actually thinks that drinking alcohol is normal. And he thinks that drinking alcohol is fucking amazing. He thinks it's brilliant. He thinks it cures all his ills and it just makes him into some superhuman, superpower guy, whatever. He is just literally does not think he has a problem, doesn't think alcohol is a problem, thinks that as long as you moderate, like he thinks that addiction is moderation, there is no difference there, and there's no problem. And people like me are absolute dingbats that like have got a screw loose somewhere and need to get a life because we're just boring kind of nanny state kind of people, right? So that is people in the stuck phase. They have no idea that alcohol addiction exists. They have no idea that alcoholism is an invisible, violent, dominant belief system. And boy, would they fight hard against that one. And they think that alcohol is normal and pleasurable. And people who are in the stuck phase, they're never, ever, ever, they're never going to change. They're not ever going to change. Whilst they're in stuck, they're never going to change. They're not prepared. They're not even thinking about it, okay? Now, the reason that we include the stuck phase in the Strive model for change is because it's really important to learn and understand why we're stuck and what it is about alcoholism as an invisible, violent, dominant belief system that gets you stuck in the first place. And the reason I say that is because nobody is going to end up doing the Strive Truth Awareness, Freedom, Experience, who is in the stuck phase, because they wouldn't be here otherwise, right? But we need to start somewhere. It is the foundation of our philosophy. It is the foundation of our belief system. And that is why we begin there. Everybody begins there. And everybody begins at the stuck phase because it is paramount that everybody that goes through the Strive model for change understands every single aspect of it. Because at the end of it, when you get to the vigilant stage, and you get to the enlightenment stage, I'm hoping that you're going to turn around and say, Lee, I want to be a Strive ambassador. I want to give back. I want to make a difference to our children's lives in the world. And I want to help you do that. I want you to coach me to help me do that. So there you are, folks. Strive, Truth, Awareness, Freedom. It is the gem in this gold mine, which is 1,000 Days Sober. We don't fuck about here, folks. We're not interested in sprints. We're marathons. We're not interested in controlling your drinking. We're not interested in drinking mindfully, whatever the fuck that means. We don't want to drink ever and ever and ever. Amen. And once we become people that don't drink alcohol, what I call strivers, then we get together and we help each other build rockets and go to Mars. Boom. That is the plan, because we're all about living a fulfilled life here at 1,000 Days Sober, a fulfilled life. If you're going to give up drinking and be miserable for the rest of your life, then start drinking again, right? That's the whole point is not to just stop drinking alcohol, it's to live a fulfilled life. And that is what we exist. That's why we're a lifetime gig. That's why our only product is 2.7 years long, right? Boom, come and join us. Anyway, enough of me. On to our guest today. Business coach and serial entrepreneur Andrew Lassise hosts the Self-Made and Sober podcast. With long-term sobriety, Andrew views his podcast as a bout of necessity for like-minded people trying to maintain sobriety while achieving more in their lives, whether it be personal or business or spiritual. Each episode features guests from people that Andrew looks up to in sobriety, in both business and in life, right? And they all come on and they discuss their ups and downs in lives, how they achieved sobriety and how they went on to achieve success in its many forms. And Andrew, get this, after 1 year of being sober, okay, and working in a restaurant and pottering around with his life, he built a company called Rush Tech Support, and it now makes multi-millions. This small business IT company. That is what I call building a rocket and going to freaking Mars. You go from working in a restaurant, you're a drunk, you're turning up drunk every day, and then you get sober for a year and you create a multi-million dollar business. That is building rockets and flying to Mars. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Andrew Lassise, but after you finish listening to him, have a real good think. Do you want to build rockets? Do you want to go to Mars? Do you want to be someone? Have you got it? Have you got the gumption? Have you got the kahunas? Have you got the coconuts to go 1,000 days sober? Well, we are running our next experience in April. Email me at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll let you know how we can get you on that very, very important person list. Okay? Take care of yourselves until next week. Ciao, ciao. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the Alcohol and Addiction Podcast. What part of the world are you in today?
We are hailing from South Florida in the States.
South Florida. I've only been to Florida once. I took my boy there to Disneyland. Kind of a post-divorced, feeling guilty as fuck, dad better pull his finger out his ass and do something to be a good dad moment.
Yeah, that's pretty much 90% of the people there.
my one abiding memory of Florida, this is so funny. We were in the pool at this hotel, like in downtown Disney, and we see this like massive storm coming our way, like the likes that you'll never see in the UK where we're from, right? And my boy says, wow, wouldn't it be cool if we stayed in the pool while the storm was here, right? So I'm going, that would be pretty rad. Like, let's do it, you know? And then as it got a bit closer, I thought to myself, I don't really know about this. So I said, I think we'll skip it. So we went back to the room. Oh, mate, we looked out the window. There was thunder, lightning, beach chairs going everywhere. You can have some serious weather in Florida.
Yeah, and it only stays for like, they say if you don't like the weather in Florida, just wait 5 minutes and then you'll get something completely different.
I found that. Yeah, 1 minute it was really hot and the next minute it was pouring down with rain. So yeah, I liked it though. I'll go back there for sure. I'm going to start with a random question if that's all right. Sort of like an icebreaker. So I'll give you an option. You can either answer a question on relationships, family, career, money, sex, or potluck.
So many fun choices that get in there. We'll go with money since I do financial coaching also.
Money. So a butcher's at this. Oh, you can pass as well if you want to. What significant economic help might you receive on the death of your parents? So doozy to start off with, isn't it?
I don't even know. I mean, I'd assume that they have life insurance, but I have no idea. I don't even know how you bring up that conversation to them. It's like, hey, you know, you're kind of like getting a little older, like just ballpark. If you died, how good is that for me?
I mean, let's talk about this, actually. It's, you know, it's something interesting to talk about because, you know, when I was drinking, I was a certain type of person. And now I'm not drinking, I'm a different type of person, right? And I think back when I was drinking, you know, the thought of me sitting my parents down and saying, all right, mom, dad, at some point you're going to joss it, which is like an English slang for die. Probably, dad, you're going to go first. And we need to figure out what's going to happen when that happens. So when it does happen, we're not all in the shit at the worst moment in time when everyone's grieving, right? You know, it's like, but I can have that conversation with them now because I feel different. Talk a little bit about how you feel different, you know, from being someone who's drinking to someone who's not drinking.
I think it comes down to really what my intentions are with the relationships and the people in my life. So pre-drinking, which, you know, knock on wood, in a couple months will be 7 years since I got clean. But my relationships were very one-dimensional and very much, what can you do for me? And I will contribute as little as possible and extract as much as possible. So, you know, my relationship with my parents, and they've always been supportive, but it was very much, okay, I'm going to go to your house to hang out, but also I know that you'll buy dinner for me. I know that I can do laundry here and not have to pay like I do at my own place. And it was a lot of taking without a whole lot of giving. So because my focus was very much on how I could benefit from any situation without even considering bringing something to it, I think the shift in my mind has really changed from what I can get out of people into what I can bring into situations.
How do you think that develops? Because I totally hear you. Same happened for me, and I see it happen to so many people. But if I was to speak to somebody who drinks alcohol and has no clue that it's a bad thing, and where I grew up in the UK, there are so many people who would definitely fall under the world's definition of an alcoholic, who wouldn't even recognize themselves as it, right? And if I spoke to them about what you just said, they wouldn't be able to comprehend it. Like, how can alcohol have that kind of an effect that one minute you're just going around your mum's thinking about yourself and the next minute you're not? I mean, and it doesn't happen that quickly, but if you could talk a bit more about that, that'd be great.
Yeah, kind of the premise on 12-step recovery, it's that you used drugs and alcohol to mask something else. And usually the root of all of our problems are being selfish, self-centered. And then that manifests in our lives. We don't like the way that our lives turn out. We cover it with drugs and alcohol to make it not as terrible. And then when we wake up, it's just an endless cycle of selfishness and self-centeredness. And so really what, you know, you go through the steps with a sponsor, and it's a whole lot of digging into, where was I at fault in these situations? Where was I looking out for me? And then kind of like the revelation that a lot of people come to is that all of the problems in my life were from my own making, and I played a role in it. So the selfishness and self-centeredness, you know, it's like, why are my parents on my case? Like, I'm just drinking. The only person I'm affecting is me. And, you know, they're worried that their kid is out there drinking and driving and doing God knows what. And, you know, I'm not thinking about what my actions, how they impact them. I'm not thinking about, well, now I go to rehab and my insurance ran out and that comes out of pocket. I'm not worried about what impact my actions have on my family or anybody really for that matter. So when you start digging in and looking at each situation that I don't like, I can usually find somewhere in that situation where I acted selfishly in the relationship at some point. And maybe the person's reaction was, it wasn't like a tick for tack, but usually we can find somewhere where I did something selfishly and the outcome was a negative one that really stemmed from my selfishness.
So your work on the steps allowed you to go somewhere that you probably wouldn't have gone, you know, like naturally. And that is to probably make an inventory of all the shit things that have happened in your life and then have a look at them through a different perspective. And then you realize, holy shit, like if I hadn't have behaved or said this, then that wouldn't have happened. How does that then manifest itself in your life in terms of actually switching from realization to acceptance? So I'm thinking more of moving forward now in your life, that every time you get into one of these spots, there's an acceptance that somewhere you would have behaved differently. So you're always taking 100% responsibility, you know, as kind of like who you are, not as a project. I mean, has that worked out for you like that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, before it was very much, I'm a victim of circumstance. My boss doesn't understand. My girlfriend doesn't understand. Blah, blah, blah. Family doesn't understand. No one understands my situation. And if only everybody would just do how I want it to be. Don't they see that everything would be just perfect? If you did this and you did that, then these things would coalesce. And then I could do this. And then everyone would be happy if everyone just did what I wanted them to do. And then when people didn't act how I wanted them to act, then I get upset about it. And then the only way I feel good is when I'm getting drunk. So it's like, my life sucks until I'm drunk, and then I do something stupid while I'm drunk to make my life suck more until I drink, and then it's better in that moment, and then I do something stupid while I'm drunk and make it keep sucking. So it's an endless cycle of just digging deeper and deeper is what my life was. And now that I see that I play a role in everything that happens, and whenever I don't like how situations are playing out, really I can only look at myself. I can only look at what am I bringing to the situation that's causing the pieces to fall out of whack. And on the other side of it, it's a positive, because if I am to blame for everything, then I can also take action and solve everything. So I don't depend on government handouts. I don't depend on whether or not Social Security is going to exist when I'm at retirement age. Like, I just pave my own path. And if I just focus on doing that, my life is better. And I'm not focused on what everybody else is doing, because I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, paving my own path, accepting that if I don't like the circumstances in my life, I can change them. But I also need to accept that if I don't like the circumstances in my life, it is only my fault. It's not my boss's fault when I'm working at a restaurant when I'm 26 or 25 that he doesn't appreciate me. It wasn't his fault that he didn't appreciate me. It was my fault for not performing at a level that he would appreciate. It was my fault for applying for that job, not knowing what it would entail. It was my fault for showing up to work drunk almost every single day. Like, none of that was his fault, but I blamed him until sobriety. And then I look back and it was like, you know, I wasn't even a good employee. So maybe I wasn't getting the recognition I thought I deserved, because not because they weren't recognizing my grace, but maybe I wasn't worth recognizing. And it wasn't like my favorite realization to come to, but at the same time, that means I can take control of the situation and I can change my actions to get the outcomes that I do want. And while I have control over it, that also means I have nobody else to blame except for myself for everything in my life.
I think you've taken it to another level, actually, which is really good for us to talk about. Because when you first started talking about the importance of taking 100% responsibility for your life, and anybody listening to this, I mean, whoa, like that's a gold gem right there that Andrew's just laid at your doorstep. I mean, if you can somehow convert to that kind of mentality and philosophy, you'll change your life measurably. But when you were talking about that, I was thinking relational. I'm thinking, oh, I can see Andrew in his closest relationships getting into a conflict situation or a pre-conflict situation, and then overriding it and managing it and riding it out, because he's now taking responsibility for his part in that relationship. But you're actually taking it one step further. You're actually saying you're going to manifest this in all areas of your life. So you're like, I'm not going to complain about my job. I'm going to get a different one. I'm not going to complain that I'm getting money. I'm going to figure out how I can get more money. Like, I'm not going to complain that I'm not the best footballer. I'm going to try to be a better footballer. Like, that's what you're talking about. You're taking it to a new level, right?
Yeah, and before I just thought my philosophy on the world was you go to school and then you get a job and then you kiss your boss's ass and then you die, and that's all that life is you just do that, and everything that was promised to me was a lie. I was told that if I graduated college I'd get a good job and I didn't. I was told that if I got good grades that I would be in high demand, and I wasn't, and it was everybody else's fault. And then when I realized, well, if I just increase my value, then maybe people will see more value, and it doesn't have to be a piece of paper that says Andrew graduated college in a place that nobody's heard of with a good enough GPA. No one cares about that. If you say Andrew's built an eight-figure IT company, it's a different thing. And I'm still the same person, but it's very, very different when you're comparing the two. Like, one's a piece of paper that says Andrew probably would be a good financial planner if he learned. And then on the other hand, it's like entrepreneur and doing financial coaching, which is like the slap in the face of the century that I thought I wanted to be a CFP certified financial planner, which just honestly at the place that I had gotten to in my life doing IT, it was going to be a lot of steps backwards to start over basically. And then I discovered financial coaching and it was like, yeah, you don't really need certifications for it. You just call it a coach instead of certified. And people are paying me more than they pay financial planners with degrees and certifications and all. So it's just, if you can bring value to people's lives, that is really what your value is. It's not the piece of paper. And one of my coaching clients, I helped him double, and I'm not going to take full credit on everything, but since he has been working with me last year, he earned an additional $200,000 on top of the year before based on some of the ideas that we had come up with in brainstorming together. I'm not going to say that I was 100% myself responsible for adding $200,000 to his top line, but at the same time, it's not a coincidence that he was stagnant and then we came up with ways that he put an extra $200,000 in his pocket. So if I asked him for $10,000, anybody would trade $10,000 for $200,000. But, you know, if he went like on Fiverr and tried to find someone for $7 to do it cheaper, okay, what kind of results are you going to get from that? So The value that you bring to other people is the value and the worth that you can get. And it doesn't come from pieces of paper and certifications. Like, that may be a foot in the door. It may be checking a box. But for me, it's been about track records and providing value, providing jobs, providing good service. These are all part of who I've become. And before, it was just, I go to work and get a paycheck and everybody else sucks except me. It's just, you know, recovery has really changed how I look at things. And as much as it sucks knowing that it was my fault for everything, it's great because it's my opportunity to fix it as well.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit and then we'll backtrack into the money stuff. I guess there's a lot of people listening to this thinking to themselves, well, okay, it's all right for me to take 100% responsibility for everything, but if I do, that's going to bring me more pain because, you know, I'm going to have to silence my own ego. It's going to be pain, suffering. I'm going to have to bow down to that woman I share a bed with who I've always told is wrong. I'm going to have to say that she's not, like, that's pain and suffering. I can't handle that. I mean, what would you say to people who are thinking that?
Welcome to the real world.
I just describe myself.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's all your fault, but I am saying it's someone's fault and it's yours.
Because, I mean, you obviously can handle the pain and suffering. Is it as bad as you thought it was? Is it a delusion? What's going on?
No. And that's another thing that I've come to realize too, is that when you come out in front of people, when you know that you've wronged them and you just own it, they say, yeah, thanks. Like, you take away all the power. And the amount of people that just are petrified by the, what if this doesn't go the way that I think that I want it to go, without even considering, what if this goes better than you think it'll go? And someone had said to me, they said, like, every awkward phone call, every awkward conversation, you know, if one, like, you know, I have to fire employees or I've fired clients and there's awkward conversations, it's 7 seconds of awkwardness and then you're in it and then it's fine. So all of this buildup in your head, well, how do I say this? What do I do? What if they say that? It's just really 7 seconds, just get it started. And 9 times out of 10, it's going to go better than you thought it would. But being out in the head of it and just saying, this is my fault. Like, I am firing you and this is my fault. I didn't get you to the level that I wanted you to perform at. And unfortunately, because I screwed up at training you properly in the amount of time that I thought was necessary, I have to let you go. And this is all my fault. What do they say? This is your fault. Like, I know. Just said that.
Yeah.
You suck. You didn't get me right. I said that.
You generally, you know, I'm with you on this. It's whenever I've gone to someone and I've had to seek forgiveness, I don't think anybody has ever done anything other than feel compassion in that moment. Even if there's a little bit of anger, like, so even if the immediate reaction is, yeah, you should be fucking sorry for that, right? If you stick the course of seeking forgiveness and you've got the right tone and body language, and I guess communication skills is also important in this, you know, because it's very easy, isn't it, for a sponsor to say to you, for example, right, go on and go off and just apologize to everyone for all the fuck ups, and then someone gives you some back in that first 7 seconds, and then you just have a meltdown. So I think communication is important, but I've always found compassion of people. I think human beings generally, as long as you're showing them compassion, they'll give you compassion back.
I think a lot of people, actually not even I think, a lot of people live in their own world. And I used to think that everybody was paying attention to what was going on in my life. And it was true that I was paying attention to everything in my life. But most people, they are the star of their own show. And an entire movie could be going on and they're just an extra in the background that has to tie their shoe. And they think the movie is about the guy on the side of the street who's tying his shoe. And really there's like a full action scene going on, but we're just all so focused on ourselves that when you step into somebody else's world and you make them the hero in their story and you say you wronged them, that's all people want to hear. They just want to hear you're right. I was wrong. What can I do to make it right? And then, you know, well, now they get to be the hero that says, oh, you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you for coming to me and recognizing how dumb you were. And that's been my experience with, I believe, all of my amends basically ended up being, keep doing what you're doing. I'm glad you said that. I'm glad to hear you're doing better. I believe all of them went that way, at least from when I was drinking and did wrongs to people into recovery and then letting them know what I've been doing or am doing and asking what I can do to make it right. And they're just, just keep doing it. Like, because I'm the extra in their movie, you know, I'm just the background noise that caused a fuss X months, years ago. And it is what it is.
Yeah, totally. And then to loop that back around to that original question, what significant economic help might you receive in the death of your parents? Who gives a shit? Because with your attitude, you don't care, right? Because you're not relying on the death of your parents. You're
100%.
You've got yourself together.
Right. My entire everything, I have put procedures in place. So, for instance, you know, I have employees that get sales, and like my income, at least in my tech company, is dependent on their performance, but their performance is dependent on their training, and their training is dependent on my processes. So if my process for getting the training correct works the way that it's supposed to, then the agents will be producing income. And then if I can multiply that and have several people generating calls, generating sales, then I own a machine that does this for me, and I provide jobs and provide a good service and good value for our clients. So it's all about setting the procedures and processes in place to automate the things that I need so that my company grows, so that my employees stay employed. But none of it is dependent on what if so-and-so becomes president and they cut out Social Security. Like, my plan is not contingent on outside forces. My plan doesn't include when my parents, because every human being in the history of the world, when they pass, until you had asked that, I don't even think it's really even crossed my mind what I get out of that, because obviously it'll be a very sad time for sure. But my plan isn't contingent. Like, that's bonus. That's you know, like Social Security and things like that. Like, that's bonus. If it happens, cool. I'm not going to be dependent when I retire on whether or not the government pays me enough money because I showed up and paid taxes. Like, I've come to realize, like, it's all a game, and I'm going to play the game within the rules that are legal, but I'm not going to be a victim of what if somebody comes and changes this, because I can pave my own path.
Mm.
And, you know, yes, it's a lot of work, and I hate to break it to everybody that wants just to win the lottery, but if you put in work and you set up the proper process, is like, it's not like the craziest, hardest thing in the world. It's really not. And there's like a billion books on how to do it too.
Mm.
It's just, no one wants to do that. They want to show up and get paid and complain about their boss. It's what everybody wants.
There's a couple of things that I want to touch upon there. Just write them down before I forget about them. The first is, when we stop drinking alcohol, you know, there's a lot of people that stop and then are like, you know, where's the fucking rainbow? Like, where's the pot of gold? Why haven't I lost weight? Well, everyone says I'm going to lose weight and get energy. Where is it? You know, and there's all these kind of expectations that life's going to be like the greatest thing in the world. And without a shadow of a doubt, for me, I'm never going to sacrifice the life I have today for the life I had when I was drinking. Like, you know, like it's completely different and beautiful in all of the ways. But it doesn't mean that I'm still not like screwing up, right? Like, I want people to listen to this and know that like we still screw up. So like, I'm thinking when you're saying about never thinking about financial assistance from dying parents. I remember a friend of mine called Neil. When his father died and his grandfather died, he got left everything that they had, really, you know, to a large degree, a particularly big property. And then he was set for life. And this is when I was sober. So this was like sometime in the last 10 years. And I remember thinking, Andrew, envy. Like, I can't believe he doesn't have to do anything now. Like, he's just made, and my mom and dad are probably going to leave me their debt. Right now, but that thinking is corrosive. That is a fixed mindset that led me to drink, that I'm still chipping away at now, trying to change to a growth mindset. So I just wanted to lay that out there and just to let people know that the work doesn't stop, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I sit here, you know, I am far from a perfect human being. Like, you just happened to give me the layup where I sound,
like I'm interviewing Bill Gates.
Right. Like, you know, to humanize me, like, I've had to let people go that I knew they were paycheck to paycheck and that losing the job would devastate them and their family. And I've had to make tough decisions like that before. So, I mean, while I'm, you know, wasn't thinking on my parents' death, there's still been times where it's like, it's going to be a huge detriment to this person, at least in the short term. And, you know, people bounce back and they get things that they're better suited for. And I mean, there have been countless times where I've lost jobs and then it turned into something better. But in, you know, the immediate short term, it sucks, but it's just part of the deal. But if I have control over everything in my life, I don't have a boss that can tell me that I'm fired. It just
can't really happen.
I can have thousands of customers that stop being customers and say, we are not going to fund you any longer. But there's quantities, you know, and it making sure that, and it's not like in a control freak way, but just, I am not dependent on somebody else's plan for mine to work out is really what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to cycle back on, just to underline that, is you talked about your business being wholly dependent on the processes that you put in place and continually reviewing and ensuring that those processes are tight. If there's a leak comes up because something along the food chain went wrong, then you can tie it back down to a process and you can fix that leak so it doesn't happen again. And then it can just run smooth. And when you talked about that, Andrew, I thought immediately about life, about how When we're drinking, we have all our processes in place, but they're all wrong. They're all unhealthy. They're all lead to these
terrible.
Processes are leading us to toxic people. They're leading us to toxic environments. And they are habitual in the same way. We've created a machine, and this machine is running like automatically. We're not even thinking about it, but we're getting all the shit at the end of it. And then when you stop drinking and you get that white space and the fuzz goes away, now you can start, and it's really essential, otherwise you're never going to maintain your sobriety, of putting in new processes that give separate outcomes, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of our habits, you know, it just comes from conditioning. And, you know, it's like something hits your conscious mind so many times that it eventually will seep into the subconscious. And that's what's going to guide our life. So, for instance, you know, I have a 1-year-old, and like he's figuring out life, like everything is brand new. And like he just started learning that clapping is something that he can do. And so now all he does just all day, he's just like, oh, wow, I can clap. I can clap. Look at me. I can clap. And but before that, it wasn't even something that he was aware of that he could do. Like if we clapped his hands, he loved it and it was his favorite. And then all of a sudden it clicked. Oh, I can be doing this. And so it's like we get so conditioned and so programmed. So looking back at like the child example, you know, a kid gets hurt and immediately they start crying. And then when they cry, then their parents come console them. And then that's the loop. It's something happens that I don't like. I start crying and then I get consoled by my parents and then things are better. And then as we get older, we just kind of get shaped by society. And it's like, well, something bad happens. I shouldn't be crying because I don't want that kind of attention because that looks bad on me that I'm a person who cries. So I have to rewire my subconscious. I have to rewire when that trigger happens of I get hurt. I don't cry anymore. This is how I handle it. And so our subconscious brain for a lot of people, a lot of alcoholics, it's I don't like my circumstance. If I drink, it gets better. I don't like this circumstance. I drink, it gets better. Then you get sober and it's like, you've lost your solution to all the triggers in your life. And then it's, I don't like my job and I just sit in it. I don't have any solution. I don't like my girlfriend and then just sit in it. And there's no solution. And until you can rewire your automatic response to these things, that's why so many people, like at first, they're like, dude, recovery sucks. Like I have to look at my part in things. I have to like pay attention to like my response on everything because my automatic response isn't what was suiting me. But until we get aware of what our responses are and what our isms are, if we don't have the awareness, we just keep going through life and calling it faith until you can really recognize your subconscious behaviors and bring them to the surface. And then you can, you know, open it up and rewire it. But it's just, I'm right-handed. Why? I don't know. I just was using my right hand and now I just keep using it and keep doing that over and over. And I mean, perhaps I could have done the same thing with my left hand, but it was just drilled into me while I'm right-handed. And that's always been my go-to. And so everything is based off of that conditioning and the just everything and how I respond to life now. It's, I don't like this situation, but what role do I play in this? How can I make this better? What can I impact? Because I refuse to just be a helpless bystander in someone else's plan.
Tell the listeners how you change your rewiring and your conditioning around money. How did you go from being an employee to being self-made?
Oh, man. That's a really good question. Really, man. I'd say the biggest shift, it really happened like once I got into entrepreneurship and I started realizing that working inside of a business, like being the IT guy, like my job isn't being the IT guy anymore. Like my job is making IT guys and making a machine that can print out IT guys. And once I realized that time is actually my greatest currency, because I can always make more money, I can always lose more money, but that number can fluctuate. But I only have some definite amount of time left on Earth, and I can't buy more of it. I can't go back and redo anything so I can live longer. So if I'm willing now to invest money that gives me time back and a return on my investment, then I start to realize that time is really my greatest currency. And if I can generate, and say I generate $1,000 and it cost me $900 to generate that $1,000. So most people's mindset is I'm going to keep that $1,000 because I did all the work start to finish and I've got $1,000. But it took them an entire week to earn that. Whereas for me, I have systems in place that ended up costing $900. I only got to keep 100 of it. However, it didn't cost me any time. It cost me the time up front to make a system. So now I'm not capped at that 8 hour or 24 hour day to earn the $1,000, or I said a week. So it took one person 1 week to earn that 1,000, but it took me zero time to earn 100. So now I get 100 of those processes in my whole approach is just getting that front part over and over and over. And then I employ people and pay for people's time. I'm not paying so much for the skill, but the time, so that I can multiply the front end and scale the front end, because the person that's part of the system, if they have two $1,000 opportunities, they can only pick one. But for me, I could take $1,000 opportunities, only take 100, and then I've made effectively 100 times more than the person that was doing all of the work with all of my time left. So really the shift, it really started happening once I stopped being just the solopreneur that does everything, trading all of my time for all of the money, and changing it to, instead of 100% of a grape, to 10% of a watermelon and owning a watermelon patch.
Right. So you said earlier on about working in a restaurant. Did you really work in a restaurant?
Yeah, 10 years.
So when you was working in that restaurant, did you still think like this but wasn't acting, or did something change and you learned something? I want to talk about the learning here. I also want to talk about the action, because I can get and understand what you're saying, but I might not necessarily be able to put that into play, right? So there's a knowledge aspect, and there's also a grab your balls and fucking go for it. So can we talk about those two?
Yeah. So, I mean, part of it is also how we've been conditioned our entire lives, that we're told to get a good steady job, and that's how we're conditioned. And most of our parents, if they're not business owners, entrepreneurs, they've been trading their time for money their whole lives. So there's really no reason why you would have ever been taught differently unless you experienced it yourself. But what really, where it started shifting for me, was I was making maybe $100, $200 per day when it was just me starting my company in my living room. And then my friend Jake came and I was paying him a 30% commission. So I was making $100, $200 by myself doing everything, the employee, like how I've always been doing it my whole life. And then Jake only did sales. He was getting 30% at the time. And Jake would generate $2,000 in sales. He would make a $600 commission, and I would make $1,400. So yes, now I have added a $600 expense, but I'm also earning $1,200 more net. And once I started experiencing that, it was like, I pay him less than he brings in. Then we got another salesman, and so they were both doing that. And then it was like, I don't have enough time to be fixing these computers, so I have to replace myself so that I can keep focusing on feeding the salesman that can get the customer to the technician to fix them. So once I started experiencing it and I realized I'm making more by not doing the work that I don't like to do anyway, because that was the thing, is I hated sales. having Jake do sales instead of me was like a, that was awesome because he was doing the thing that I hated doing. But the thing that I didn't realize is I was making more money doing less work. And once it started clicking that that's what running a business is, it's not, I'm Andrew, the IT guy that fixes everything, but I'm Andrew who owns an IT machine. And here's how we automate all the pieces of it to get the products that we want so that my income isn't dependent on how much effort even I'm putting in. It's the people and processes that are running automatically, and that's providing jobs.
Do you think if you would have carried on drinking that you would have got to the point where you are today?
No, if I carried on drinking, I'd still be working in restaurants because it's an industry that is very, very good with an alcoholic lifestyle. You get very flexible hours. You can call out whenever. Your job's really not that demanding. It's cash-based. You get to network with other people that are in bars and restaurants, so you get hooked up. Or if you're like me, you just take from the place that you work at. And so it's very conducive to the alcoholic lifestyle. I never would have gotten a DUI that led me to go to rehab in South Florida, that led me to the job that introduced me to full-time IT employment. It never could have possibly happened without getting sober, but just there would be no reason for me to want to get a job in IT if I was still drinking, because restaurants are perfect for alcoholics. Mm.
And you talked about the importance of recognizing and owning 100% responsibility is like a real big change. But what else between stopping drinking and being self-made, what else about that stopping drinking led to you to be able to get the confidence and the courage and the bravery to make these decisions to ultimately be self-made?
I think getting past the initial hurdle of just not drinking, because that's been my response to everything I don't like in my life. Just like how children cry, I would drink. So every time something happened, I had to just become aware of it and realize I don't solve this by drinking anymore. I solve this now by, I can use prayer and meditation and gratitude and focusing on what I do have versus what I think that I want, that I deserve. All of these things are such a big part of it. But when your response to everything is drinking, then you don't really, like, you can't really even put the pieces together. Like, my nights were just getting drunk. So I couldn't really accomplish anything. And, you know, just the reality, it's not good for your health. It's not good for your brain. It's not good for a whole lot of things other than, like, hookups or something. But, like, in general, it just puts you at a different plane. So I start getting some confidence in myself when I stop drinking, and then it's been a couple weeks, couple months, and I'm getting that momentum and those wins under my belt. And then it's, well, what else could I do? What? And I've come to be dependent on my higher power, and that's where I will put my faith in something other than myself, that the universe will provide for me if I follow the path and don't try to work my angle selfishly, but selflessly focus on helping others. But all these rewirings, they all had to come from the awareness that happened once I stopped drinking and then working with a sponsor. They were like, yep, all your problems are your own making, and you can also be part of the solution as well.
When you were going through those dreaded triggers and the resistance in your mind is like, you know, shouting down a megaphone at you to go and have a drink to solve your problems, and you've got your toolkit out and you're doing whatever is in your toolkit in order to avoid it. Was there a light bulb moment for you? Was there a tool, a technique, or an understanding that eventually came along and you didn't have triggers anymore? Or was it more a case of, you know, riding through it all, and over time you just become less and less trigger happy, I guess?
Yeah, it wasn't just one moment that magically stopped everything. It was more of a progressive, like, you know, the first month I spent in rehab. So, I mean, it's not that difficult to stay sober in rehab, where the only thing you really need to do is not get drunk. But I remember I had maybe 2 weeks sober and I was like, wow, like I haven't drank for 2 whole weeks. And then after a month, then I got out, got a sponsor, started working the steps. And I remember one day I'd gotten off the, I was talking to my mom on the phone, and I, part of my plan in going to rehab, I told my parents that I'd go to rehab if they paid my rent and they paid my credit card bills. So I gave them an ultimatum for being an alcoholic, is how backwards my thinking was. But I maybe had like 3 months sober or something. I remember I didn't have a car or anything. I was riding a bike, and I remember getting off the phone with my mom and just telling her, oh, you know what? I'm making money now. Like, you don't have to pay for anything anymore. And I remember getting off the phone and thinking, like, what the hell was that? That was the whole point to all of this. You blew it. That ruined everything. But so that was one of like the moments where in my head, kind of like, oh, I'm not being selfish. I'm looking out for her best interest. And I don't regret that decision. And then things just, you know, the universe just kept giving me opportunities that I didn't think I was ready for. And I just kept taking them anyway. And it just kept working out. And once you get enough wins under your belt, you just kind of, even when things aren't going the way that I think that I want them to, things keep working out. Like my wife and I were trying to have a child, and we unfortunately had a miscarriage a couple years ago, and it was devastating. But the silver lining through it, like, we grew a whole lot as a couple, and we got a puppy who, it was a terrible idea at the time, but you know, so many things good came out of that terrible experience. But if I just looked at it by itself, you know, it was a terrible thing that happened, but it happened. And I can look back on my drinking career and getting a DUI and going to rehab. Like, most people would look at that as a bad moment. But for me, that was one of the best things that could have possibly happened my entire life. Mm. So my perception on events and whether or not I want to look at them as an opportunity or I want to be a victim, I get that choice. And it's just been my experience that time and time again, even when I don't like things, when they're not my preference, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad.
I like that. And now you've got a little nipper of your own. You're no doubt going to raise them, that when somebody asks them a question, what significant economic help might they receive when your dad Andrew dies, they'll turn around and say, I don't need his help. I'm self-made. I'm sober.
Yeah. That's like my greatest fear, is that he just becomes like entitled and he's just like, my dad will pay for that.
Yeah. Well, that is now your biggest challenge. I'm sure you can handle it. Andrew Lassies, thank you for being a guest on the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. Really appreciate your candor, and keep doing the good work you do. Get over to his podcast and have a listen to it, Self-Made and Sober. It's fantastic. And if you want to hire, are you still taking on clients in a financial coaching capacity?
Yeah, I mean, if people are looking for help, you know, I'm always available. Mm-hmm. And that's at lassiscoaching.com, LASSISE coaching.com. And help business owners also, small business IT, Rush Tech support. Let's see, what else do I have to plug? Yeah, Self-Made and Sober podcast. And
yeah, anything else?
That'll be enough for now.
That's enough for now. He hasn't got time. He hasn't got time to do anything else. Thank you, Andrew. We'll get all the links on there for people, and wish you all the best. Thanks for joining.
Awesome. Thanks, Lee. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. And before you bugger off and go listen to someone more important than me, like Tim Ferriss or Joe Rogan, I've got a few things to tell you about. First and foremost, if you really like the show, please go to your podcast platform, rate and review it. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everyone how great I am. I'll be really, really appreciative. Secondly, if you want to learn more about the work that we're doing here at 1000daysober.com, then head to that website, 1000daysober.com. You can learn how to get involved in this amazing project to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol for 1,000 days and beyond, okay? Get over there. Get involved, We will provide you with a tremendous support system and world-class workshop experience called the Strive Sobriety System, okay? It's catered to hit you at all stages of this sobriety journey. So if you're like contemplating whether or not it's right for you to stop drinking, don't worry, we've got your back. We'll hit you on that. If you've been stopped drinking for now 7 days, 8 days, and you want to make an even bigger inroads, we've got you. If you've actually stopped drinking for 3-4 years, but you still want to be amongst a community of people who don't drink alcohol and you want to enrich your life and live a fulfilled life, we've got your back as well. So get over to www.1000daysober.com, okay, and join our Strive support system. It is amazing. You will love it. If you want to follow us on social, you can find us at 1000daysober.com on Instagram and 1000daysober.com at YouTube, where you can watch all of these podcasts in the flesh rather than just listening to them. Without further ado, I'm going to shut the hell up and leave you in the capable hands of yourself. Thanks for listening.